Welcome to the Believe Podcast, a conversation between friends over a passage of scripture. I'm Carolyn Kirsten.
And I'm Marvin Williams.
And today is episode 125, continuing our chronological look at the Gospels. Today we have some healings and Jesus predicts his death. It's kind of a downer there, but it's what's going to happen.
Okay. It is what it is. All right. So here's the question. So what do you think it would feel like to not be in control of your body?
Okay, now we have talked about this before. I very much like to be in control of things. So not being in control of my body is terrifying.
It's terrifying. I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, I hear, you know, as you get older, you lose control of some things. I'm not looking forward to that. But how about you? How do you feel about
it? I hope I keep control of all parts of my body as I get older.
Or uncontrollable laughter. Okay. Maybe that's what we just
I think it would be terrifying. It would be like there's this helplessness and hopelessness that when you don't have control over your limbs or being able to walk, or I remember earlier, like in my teens, I'm not a very good swimmer, and I went down a water slide, and in the middle of the slide, I got turned around. Oh. And so I was coming down backwards.
So you didn't know when the end was.
I didn't know when the end was. And it was terrifying because I had no control.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's nothing inside the tube that you can hold on to stop, because the water is coming down, you're sliding. And so it was terrifying.
I had that
then.
On a ski hill, on a Black Diamond ski hill where, yeah.
Yeah. So why are we talking about this? Well, we are introduced to a boy mm-hmm. who doesn't have control of his body. Someone else does, and we're going to talk about that. So this is post transfiguration.
Yes,
and this is a great contrast. We talked about it last episode. Can't stay on the mountain. As soon as you come back from a conference or come down off the mountain, the high, there are dishes, there's laundry to be done. In this case, Jesus and the disciples come off the mountain and they're met with a father who is desperate, who says, "Hey, my son has a demon." And he goes on to explain all the ways the demon tries to hurt the boy and ruin the image of God in the person. And again, we put a point there that Satan hates the image of God in every human being, and he will do literally any and everything to try to destroy and for the image of God not to be seen in the world. So we see the mountain experience, mm-hmm. and all of our mountain experiences are designed to equip us for when we get back home,
yes.
for the dishes and the laundry, and to meet fathers who are desperate at the foot of the mountain who have demon-possessed sons. And so there's this sense where we see the mountain fuels us for the everyday experiences. So what do we see here? What do we have here in this passage?
Yes. So this father approaches Jesus, and Jesus's response is, "Bring him to me."
Yeah.
Which again, we've talked about, Jesus is overflowing with compassion. He is unwilling. He was unwilling for them to go hungry.
Right.
Here too, he says, "Bring him to me." The disciples have failed to cast this demon out.
Yeah.
The father says, "I went to your disciples. They weren't able to do it." And Jesus says, "Bring him to me."
Yeah, yeah.
Out of his love and his compassion. And the disciples are also still learning about their
right.
the authority, the power that God has given to him. And
exactly.
And he talks to them about that after he casts the demon out.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. But
yeah, and again, we see, you know, over these last several episodes, we see Jesus modeling. So Jesus has already cast out demons in the past. They've seen it, and Jesus has given them authority. He's delegated his authority. So they can actually do it. They've actually done it in the past. We've seen it where Jesus sends them away and he sends them out and they preach a message and they cast out demons. So they actually can do it. Mm-hmm. And not in their own strength and not in their own power, but they have the authority of heaven to do it. And as you mentioned, the only reason the father brings the boy to the disciples is because the father actually believed the Talmudim can actually do what the rabbi does. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned they could not do it. They bring the father brings the boy to Jesus and so, again, Jesus is modeling something. Even in casting out the demon, he is modeling again for them. All right, fellas, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. I've taught you this once before. Here's how you do it. And again, I love the fact that Jesus is constantly teaching them, and he is constantly teaching us. So what else do you see here?
So in his request, the father explains what happens. I mean, and it would absolutely be terrifying as a parent, like these seizures that throw him in the fire, they throw him in water to drown him. I mean, this is just horrifying. And the father uses the phrase, you know, if you can do anything, yeah, please do it. And yeah, Jesus says, if I can, in Mark 9:23 says, if you can, all things are possible for the one who believes. Now, pause a second. I do think that is something we need to be careful we don't misinterpret.
Yeah.
All things are possible for one who believes. What we're not talking about is the power of positive thinking.
Like, absolutely,
believe it, yep, it will happen. We're not talking about manifesting something into existence or...
One of my least favorite words right now. So
yes, and there is a lot, whether casually used or more seriously. I mean, people do use that. Oh, you know, you just got to be positive about it, and
it'll happen,
and it will happen. Yep. That is not what Jesus is saying there when he says that everything is possible for the one who believes in him.
Absolutely,
and his power. Well, when he says that, then the boy's father says, I do believe.
Yeah.
Help my unbelief.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, man, this is one of my favorite verses because I think we all find ourselves there. You know, my belief is so incomplete. It is so limited. There are moments where it's inadequate. I believe deep down inside, I really do believe. So Jesus, would you please close the gap between what I believe in my head, mm-hmm, and my experience of belief in you, and where I can fully give myself to you, where I can, this is one case where I really do want to be out of control, mm-hmm, to let him be the one in control of the situation that this man was in, but also that we sometimes find ourselves in. And so I love that this man is a model. He is he's authentic. He's transparent. He's like, Jesus, I'm struggling. Mm-hmm. I believe. I've heard of all the things you've done. I've even seen some of your work. So there's something in me that's moving me to believe, but there's a tinge in me that's like, I don't know if he can do this. Like, I've lived with this. I've lived with my son, and you've not seen what I've seen. And it feels as if there is no hope for him. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's this, no, I do believe, but there's so, it's in, my belief is so incomplete. I feel like it's so inadequate. Would you please grow my faith in this moment so I can believe?
And I love that he goes to Jesus with, yeah, his unbelief. Yeah. Like, he's asking Jesus to help him. I mean, that's very vulnerable and transparent. And that's what we can go to God, yeah, with our unbelief. Like, yeah, I do believe, and I want to, help me,
yeah,
believe this next step, or believe more fully in that your provision or your protection. Help my unbelief. We can go to God with our unbelief.
Absolutely. And again, we've said this over and over again. Jesus does not scold him, mm-hmm. does not condemn him, doesn't say, like, haven't you seen all the stuff that I've done? Haven't you read the, haven't you been on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, all of the, have you seen all the people that I've healed? He doesn't do that. He just simply says, all right, I get it. Everyone is still learning. Everyone is still growing in their faith. Everyone, you know, you're being impacted by an entire generation of unbelief. So I understand your context and surrounding, and it seems as if I can't do anything. And I think it's the same. It's true for us. We are surrounded by people who don't believe in Jesus anymore. We're surrounded by people who, like, that's antiquated. Don't really believe in that stuff anymore. So I think our culture feeds us unbelief sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that Jesus kind of gets alone with this man and say, hey, listen, I can help you. And so we see ultimately Jesus heals the boy and he gives the father back his son, and the people are astonished. They are absolutely astonished at what Jesus has done in this case. And mm-hmm. So in anything just that you,
well, then, see. And then I think it is interesting that, then the disciples pull Jesus aside and say, okay, why couldn't we do it?
Right.
And his response is, this kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer. And I think that, again, we've talked about that, that just reveals again, the disciples are still growing in their understanding, but prayer is that key that unlocks faith in
absolutely,
our lives.
Absolutely.
We can't underestimate the importance of growing in our prayer life and even understanding what that conversation, that two-way conversation, that moment-by-moment conversation, inviting him in, listening to him, sharing our concerns and our hearts and our struggles, all of that, prayer is the key that unlocks faith.
Yeah. I love that Jesus, I think it's in the Gospel of Mark, he takes the disciples aside. He could have put them on blast, mm-hmm. like right in front of everybody. Yes. He could have said, like you've been with me all this time, but he takes them and he looks at it as another teachable moment, takes them aside, models, disciples them again, teaches them. And so I love the fact that even in their failure, Jesus is still compassionate. Even in their failure, Jesus is still teaching. And I hope that even in my failure, I'm open to Jesus, you know, again, teaching me, you know, to do it better the next time. And so I love the fact that Jesus says, hey, listen, this is not about your own strength. This is truly about dependence on God. The demons don't bow to you because of who you are. They bow because of who I am in you. They bow because of the authority of God. And so I love the I love that the people are astonished. And then the text says the people are marveling over what Jesus has done in this moment. He doesn't bask in their marveling. He doesn't bask in their astonishment. He comes and he puts a damper on the whole party.
He does, because then he says, well, I mean, he doesn't say well, but he says, the Son of Man is about to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and he will be raised on the third day. And they were greatly distressed. I love when the understated reactions. But I'm sure they were like, what? Like, you just healed this
exactly.
boy.
This is amazing.
And now you say, I mean, I'm sure they weren't even like, are you talking about you? Who is he even talking about? We'll see him continue to predict his death and talk about this. I'm sure at this point they're just like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
Fellas, I'm going to die. And yeah. It's like, Jesus, could you have given us a different transition, yeah. another transition to this? But I mean, and again, Jesus is reminding them, I am not here
yeah.
to, you know, to do all of these miracles and to build a following mm-hmm. off of the miracles. I am here to accomplish a mission, and that mission is to ultimately die for humanity. And so they go in and out. They get it, then they don't get it. They get it, you know, you have Peter saying one day, you're the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And then you have the next moment, it's like, wow, we don't really understand what you're doing here. And I think part of the reason they are distressed in this moment is because they are not expecting a Messiah to die.
Yeah.
They are looking for a Messiah who is going to come in on a white horse, sit on the throne, and ultimately give them places in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. And never in their wildest dreams were they thinking about a Messiah who would die. Mm-hmm. And so again, Jesus, I think what he does before we get too far down the road to say, let's make him a king, he says, hey, I just want to remind you of why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a healthy reminder. It is a way to help us to know what discipleship is all about. It is following Jesus into, yes, the joy and the forgiveness, but it's also following him into suffering and pain. And again, we talked about it last episode of dying to ourselves, taking up the cross and following Jesus. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Just one little thing. I think it's kind of fun that only Matthew, who remember is a tax collector, only Matthew is the one who says talks about in Matthew 17, 24 through 27, that Jesus paid the temple tax. He just tells this little story of, you know, somebody confronts Peter and says, hey, does your rabbi pay the tax? He said, yeah, he does. And then there's a little miracle where Jesus says, Peter, go grab the first fish you can catch and there'll be a coin. You can pay our tax. I just think it's fun that Matthew, the tax collector, wants us also to know, hey, he followed the authorities of the earth. He is the King of Kings.
Absolutely.
Every right to, you know, to not. And yet he does. Yeah. He obeys the authorities of the land.
And again, I know that's just a little story, but I love it because in our divided world, the ones who follow the Prince of Peace should not be causing conflict. The one who follows the Prince of Peace should not be causing conflict. And I think sometimes as Christians, we say, oh, we're Christian, so we can, it gives us a right to be obnoxious and to break the law and to break the rules. And Jesus's example, he's modeling for us again mm-hmm. what it looks like. I'm the King of Kings, and yet I am living under the authority of the Jewish law. And I want to model for you. I want to give you every reason to be good citizens in a world where it's so easy to say, oh, we follow the rabbi, we follow Jesus, so we can break the law. And I think the one thing it ought to be true of us is good Christians should be good citizens. And so I love that little story, and I love the fact that that you highlight that.
Yeah. So what can we believe about God, ourselves, and others from this?
I think number one is that Jesus still has power over the demonic. He still has power over evil. He can... he can defeat the enemy just like he does within this boy's life. And I love the fact that his power extends to not only feeding 5,000, feeding 4,000, but he also has power over the underworld, if you will. And then for me is, man, I'm convicted all over again with the call to believe. To believe and to cry and pray like this man. I believe, but help my unbelief with seemingly impossible situations. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love Jesus's singular focus on his mission. Yeah. You know, while it does come across as kind of a downer of, hey, I'm actually going to die, but he doesn't get caught up in the accolades or the admiration of the crowd. He knows what he's here for, and he is sticking to that. We see his power. We see his humility in submitting to the authorities and paying his tax. He is singular in his focus. And I think that is a good lesson for me too. Like, am I doing what I'm doing for the reputation or response of other people? Is that how I, maneuver myself through my day or prioritize my time? Or do I know what my purpose and my mission is? And I'm singularly focused on that, no matter what other people think or how they respond.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah. Thank you, friends, for joining us. If you have never subscribed, do that so that you can get each week's episode right in your podcast feed. And also take time to give it 5 stars, little recommendation that helps other people find it too. We will see you next time.